From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our special guest on this edition of the program is Garry Kasparov, world-renowned chess champion and global champion for democracy and human rights. We spoke with Garry last year, and we are delighted to welcome him again this year to discuss themes in his new book, Winter is Coming, Why Vladimir Putin and the Enemies of the Free World Must Be Stopped. The book will be published at the end of October. When we spoke on the sidelines of last year's United Nations General Assembly, Garry Kasparov asserted that Russian President Vladimir Putin posed as much of a threat, if not more so, than the so-called Islamic State, or ISIL. Because President Putin challenges the fundamental values of the free world, Garry Kasparov argues that Vladimir Putin is the most dangerous because he possesses nuclear weapons and has enormous resources at his disposal. Garry Kasparov characterizes Vladimir Putin as the dictator par excellence, and as such, he can never be a partner for peace or part of the solution in either Syria or Ukraine. Well, we'll be talking with Garry about this argument and to what extent inaction on the part of the West, whether in Syria or Ukraine and elsewhere, inaction which created a vacuum for the likes of Vladimir Putin and other bad actors to fill the void, contributed to the chaos we are witnessing today, whether the invasion of Crimea, the instability and violence in eastern Ukraine, or the festering civil war in Syria and the subsequent refugee crisis. Garry Kasparov, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for inviting me again.
We're really delighted to have you, and congratulations on your forthcoming book. As I said in the introduction, Garry, you said that Vladimir Putin last year was a greater threat than the so-called Islamic State, also known as ISIL, based on his annexation of Crimea, the destabilizing of eastern Ukraine. Do you still stand by that argument?
Absolutely. Any crisis in the world we'll look at eventually has some kind of connections to Putin, direct or indirect, which is not surprising because you may characterize Putin as a capo di tutti capi, boss of bosses. He's the most powerful dictator in the world, who defies the rules, and who is ready to fill vacuum created by the retreat of the United States and inability of European Union to master sort of coherent global foreign policy. Power abhors vacuum, and Putin is very good in just finding the weak spots on the world map. And it's not necessarily a neighboring country, so-called the near abroad of Russia, of one of the former Soviet republics. Now we could see him entering the game in Syria, big entry, and naturally is a part of his much larger plan of destabilizing the Middle East, hoping that oil prices could go up, but most importantly, creating chaos, which leads to some consequences like a refugee crisis. And we understand that these hundreds of thousands and eventually probably millions of refugees in Europe will destabilize Europe and will weaken the European Union quite dramatically, and to make it virtually impossible for European nations to stand against Putin's aggression in Ukraine and, who knows, maybe against the Baltics.
And now, of course, we're witnessing, as you mentioned, and as we all know, Putin is upping the ante in Syria with all kinds of weaponry, with the advisors. Before, the United States presumably didn't get involved in Syria or didn't back more aggressively the moderate opposition or strike at Assad's military assets after he used chemical weapons because, well, it meant taking on Russia or Iran, Syria's backers. You had argued that if we had helped either Ukraine or Syria much earlier, that we might have been able to stop further aggression, and possibly we would have seen the prevention of this flow of refugees. How do you think President Obama couldn't see that? We know that many of his advisors did. General Petraeus, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, Leon Panetta, they argued for the United States to help the moderates with weapons, with political advice, not boots on the ground. Again, what's going on in the mind of President Obama?
I'm not a shrink, you know, to read people's minds. And I'm probably the last person to give any advice to President Obama because he has very strong views on foreign policy and they're exactly opposite from what I believe is right for America and for the free world. Obama has not been hiding, for his credit, his intentions to retreat America from the world stage. He has been very open about it. And 70 million American voters about this number, supported him in 2008 and even in 2012. Smaller number, but, you know, comfortable majority for him to stay in the White House. Let's not forget that in 2012, by the way, his opponent, Mitt Romney, said Russia was the number one geopolitical threat to the United States. And he was laughed by Obama, by liberal media in the United States, because they didn't see it coming. When we try to analyze the situation in Syria now, and it's instead of just saying, oh, what could be done right now, right now? I think it's just, you know, a professional view. I was used to be a professional chess player, so I knew how to analyze the games and to look for mistakes, to understand what did go wrong, you know, and how could you improve your strategy, and so what was the cause of your current problems, of your trouble. Obama wanted to bring back American troops. This position has been widely supported by Americans because the nation was tired by the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And many today have been repeatedly saying that invasion of Iraq was a mistake and Obama had no choice but to bring troops back. Now, without even going to this lengthy discussion about the invasion of Iraq, and I'm not here to defend George W.'s position, but it had happened. And let's not forget, by 2008, by making some right moves after this initial questionable step of invading Iraq, the reason I cannot call it a mistake, because I was born and raised in a communist country, and any action that leads to the demise of dictatorship and liberation of people, even with some dangerous consequence afterwards, I mean, I cannot speak against it, because Saddam Hussein was a butcher and he deserved to be hanged. And America's invasion of Iraq initially helped Iraqi people. Mistakes were made during the campaign, after the campaign. But at the end of the day, in 2008, Bush more or less pacified Iraq. Al-Qaeda was kicked out. America made an alliance with the Sunni tribes in the central Iraq, in Anbar province. There was some kind of fragile peace between Sunnis, Shias, and Kurds, and American presence in Iraq guaranteed that. Even if Obama believed that the invasion was a mistake and America had to go home, you couldn't put ideology ahead of the situation on the ground, ahead of the facts. And the facts were very simple, that in any game, you cannot improve situation by trying to rebuild the status quo, which is already dead. American invasion of Iraq created a new situation. And in 2009, 2010, bringing troops back without recognizing that this fragile status quo that has been established after all these back and forth and mistakes and some good moves, it was already a long game. And trying to forcefully end the game without paying attention to the situation on the ground was a much bigger mistake. And that was a real mistake that could lead to dramatic consequences as we're seeing them now. So removing troops and creating vacuum was a very big mistake. The first negative result was to alienate the Sunni tribes in the central Iraq that were left without any American support with the Shia government in Baghdad. At a time when America started making all sorts of moves to improve relations with Iran, so for Sunnis who experienced this lengthy war, sectarian war, with Shia majority in Iraq, that was a very, very bad sign. So they looked for someone to support them. And don't forget, they helped America to expel Al-Qaeda. So they expected some kind of reward. The reward was kiss goodbye, see you next time. That was Sunnis on Iraqi side. And then when we look at ISIS or ISIL, whatever name you choose to give to the barbarians, they rise mysteriously coincided with Obama's betrayal of Syrians after this infamous red line. And when you look at the map of the territory controlled by ISIS or ISIL, you'll find out that it's this territory is predominantly populated by Sunnis on both sides of the border. So in 2013, you got now Syrian Sunnis betrayed by Obama, recognizing that America would not help them against Assad. And Assad family has been killing them for generations. And now they could see that Assad could use even chemicals and America wouldn't lift a finger. So again, they look for protection. And here you have the rise of ISIS, because they could mobilize Sunnis from both sides of the border and to create a very powerful army. Yes, I understand that Islamic State has been doing a very good job by promoting its radical barbarian ideology worldwide and attracting thousands of volunteers from around the world. But you cannot control a large piece of territory without full support of population. And this is something that we don't want to recognize that for many of the Sunnis who have been butchered by Saddam, you know, and then, you know, faced problems with Shia government in Baghdad and gassed by Assad, ISIS looked like liberators. They didn't care about, you know, the cultural monuments in Palmyra and about Christian Yazid minorities. They were looking for power of their own that could offer them protection both against Assad and Iranians, who were, by the way, allies. Now, don't tell me that Putin had nothing to do with this handmade crisis, because he was on both sides, Iranians and Assad, and he made sure Assad could survive the most difficult moments of the civil war. So America moved away, created vacuum, and this vacuum was filled by ISIS. And now Putin saw another great opportunity. It's to come to the stage as a liberator by supporting his clients, Iranians and Assad, and making sure that Russia will replace the United States as the most dominant force in the region, which will put Russia in direct or indirect control of the large oil resources and most sensitive religious region in the world.
Absolutely. No question about it. And of course, now Vladimir Putin, under the guise of combating ISIS, ISIL, Islamic State, is in effect actually helping to preserve the regime of Bashar al-Assad and, of course, his own regime. So that brings us to the question I read somewhere where that Russian deployment to Syria is game-changing. Would you agree that this is a game-changer, that it could alter the nature of international negotiations, compromise and weaken the cohesion and efforts of the U.S.-led so-called anti-ISIS coalition and actually strengthen the Assad regime and initiate even direct Russian-Iranian military operations? And if that's the case, what are the consequences and what should the United States be doing?
U.S.-led coalition, or so-called U.S.-led coalition, exists on paper. Putin's troops are already on the ground. And by sending his troops to Syria and doing it openly, most of these troops actually just, you know, were relocated from Ukraine. So they already had a military experience in instigating the war in Ukraine. Putin's sending a signal to every dictator in any quarter of the world. You stay with me, I will not let you down. I could protect Assad against Obama. Look, America is going down. It's a paper tiger. I'm Vladimir Putin, could offer you protection. And I will send Russian soldiers thousands of miles away from Russia if you are staying with me. That's a signal. I don't think it's surprising, you know, that as we could see now that even Netanyahu flies to Moscow. I mean, I'm not sure he's very happy to, but Russian troops are next door. And America showed a cold shoulder. America betrayed Israel. And Netanyahu is a prime minister of the country that could be not a victim. I believe Israel was too strong to be a victim, but could be a target of all these radical groups. And even, you know, by accident, it could be engaged in a new war in the Middle East. So Netanyahu had to talk to Putin. But mainly, Putin is scoring points with different undemocratic governments in the world. Because right now, everybody in the most remote quarters could read this message. If I stick with Putin, he'll definitely help me. So it will have consequences way beyond Syria, Iraq, Middle East. As I said 2 years ago, when Obama reneged on his infamous red line statement, that would send a message to Putin, to Iranians, to North Koreans, to Venezuelans, to Cubans, as it did. And right now, if Russian boots on the ground in Syria will be unchallenged, as it seems now, that means that Putin defied all the rules and basically wiped out all the security arrangements made after World War II. So the United Nations is no longer functioning. Putin doesn't give a damn about it. So he demonstrates that he doesn't even need the veto right. He does how he pleases, and America is no longer offering any balance, no longer for next 480-something days, as long as Obama is in the office. But the problem is that 15, 16 months is almost eternity now in modern politics. So I'm fairly pessimistic about my weather forecast for the next 15 months, because it's not just winter is coming. It could be a very long winter. And the most troubling thing for me is that we are not prepared and we don't want to listen to the weather forecast. We still believe it's a little blizzard that, you know, comes and goes. No, that's a serious winter and we're not ready. And every day of delay means the price for confronting this new, you may call it a Cold War, but it's a serious geopolitical challenge to the free world. The price goes up.
With respect to Syria, one more question before we turn to other things. The U.S. is talking about talking to the Russians. I mean, how can one cooperate with the arsonist who's pretending to be the fireman, one could say. I mean, again, Obama, you know, talks about that Assad had to go, but this disconnect between the rhetoric and action is becoming extremely hard to...
The first thing I would do, I would not let Kerry to stay one-on-one with Lavrov, even on the telephone. Because any time when they meet, Kerry caves in, he gives up something. So it probably began when Kerry was in Moscow after Putin, came back to Kremlin. And Putin kept him waiting for 3.5 hours. I think that's for Putin was already a sign that Kerry is a lightweight and he could deal with him at Putin's terms. And now every time, that Kerry calls Lavrov or even worse, meet him, it ends up with a total disaster because you could see how America keeps conceding. We saw it in the Iranian negotiations and we could see it everywhere. Every line that was the United States position on Syria now has been eroding. And it's no longer that Assad must go. Yes, Assad has to go, but we're willing to negotiate a timetable. And Assad in Damascus, that was the prime reason for the civil war in Syria. And if America intervened at early stage, we could have saved hundreds of thousands of lives and we could have prevented the Russian-Iranian coalition to become a dominant force in such a sensitive region.
You don't think that Putin would have intervened had the United States intervened many more years ago? In other words, try to bolster Assad? Because that was the argument we heard from those who were timid about doing so then.
We know Putin fills the vacuum. Putin is not willing to take on the United States in open confrontation. Few American tanks in Estonia definitely played a very important role in sending the message. Because it's not just about Putin. It's, of course, Putin is a dictator. Of course, he can give orders. Of course, his generals will follow the orders. But then just imagine, there's a fundamental difference between an order, send troops to Syria, help Assad and fight ISIS. Or send troops to Syria, we have to confront Americans now. And I'm sure it will create some kind of discomfort among Russian generals. And Putin knows that. He's getting more and more arrogant and getting emboldened by the weakness of the United States. That's what happened in the 30s with Adolf Hitler, who has been growing stronger and stronger by getting all the concessions from European nations. And it happened with every dictator. Yeah, they don't start with big demands. They grow. And their strength, is connected to our weakness. Even if we look weak, that already adds up to their negative energy and also helps a dictator, in our case, the dictator, Vladimir Putin, to gain more power within his inner circle and within Russia because he looks invincible. He looks like a global leader who can defy the United States and to get what he wanted.
We'll deal with U.S. reticence to intervene in Syria on behalf of the moderates in just a minute with respect to the context of the Iran deal. But first, you're listening to Press Conference USA on The Voice of America. I'm Carol Castiel. Our guest is Garry Kasparov, world-renowned chess champion, Russian pro-democracy leader, and global human rights activist. His upcoming book is Winter is Coming, Why Vladimir Putin and the Enemies of the Free World Must Be Stopped. It will be published at the end of October. We're coming to you from Garry's office in New York City. This is a reminder that Press Conference USA is also available online as a podcast. Please visit our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. Also, we love to hear from you. Please send your feedback to PCUSA@voanews.com. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or keep up with us on Facebook. Here's a shout out to a faithful listener in Jos, Nigeria, John Sunny Egwi-Wila. Well, back to you, Garry Kasparov, to talk about one other pretext for which some say the Obama administration didn't really want to too aggressively back the moderate opposition who were pleading for political and military support in order to combat Assad's onslaughts, barrel bombs, and so forth. And that is the United States and the P5 plus one, of which the U.S. is, of course, a partner. We're negotiating with Iran, the Iran nuclear deal. So we're reading now that, they didn't really want to upset the Iranians. They wouldn't say that then or out loud necessarily, but now we're reading more and more about that. But do you think that Iran would have negotiated any differently had the United States been much more aggressive in Syria? Would that have killed the negotiations, in your view?
Iran was at the table not because America was weak at that time, but because Iran was suffering under sanctions. And Iranians realized that they needed some kind of diplomatic cover-up, at least. I don't know whether they were negotiating good faith, whether they want to reach a deal, but they recognized fairly quickly that Obama's administration was willing to make a deal at any cost. So Iranians, I think probably they were surprised, but naturally they wanted to grab the opportunity. Obama removed military option from the table. But as I said, for instance, in case of Ukraine, yes, nobody expects America to send boots to the Ukrainian ground. But why do you make public statements? If you're trying to negotiate, period, you don't want to say that I will not do this, this and that. So, yes, you may imply that you are reluctant, but you want to keep as many options as possible. Iranians were quite worried because America was in Iraq. And the surge in the last 2 years of Bush's second term worked. And America succeeded in kicking out Al-Qaeda and by making an alliance with Sunni tribes in the central Iraq. America was also friendly terms with Kurds. So Iranians recognized that they had to be cautious because American troops were next door. And Iran didn't hide its ambitions to become a dominant power in the region. And of course, Assad's regime was one of the cornerstone of this policy. Through Assad, they could get their supply to Hezbollah, another Iranian client, it's a terrorist organization, and eventually to Hamas. So they had an opportunity to support terrorists, you know, via their crony in Damascus. So the fall of Assad could be a terrible blow to Iranians. It could definitely curb their ambitions and also could send a message to other forces there, because this region is very sensitive to messages, to signs. And what everybody could see these days, that America proved to be weak. Iran brought America to its knees, negotiating the deal that was so good for Iran that nobody could believe it would ever happen. So the consequences of America's weakness and consequently Iranian strengths would play the role throughout the whole region. Because as Sunnis in Iraq and Syria realized that America would not be helping them and they had to look for any support and they ended up with such a horrible force as ISIS, you have Arab monarchies in the Middle East. I have no doubt that as we speak, Saudi Arabia has been actively pursuing nuclear weapons, and it's probably not that difficult because they have been financing Pakistan for years and Pakistan has nukes. So every country in the region recognizes that facing Iranian threat, they had to be ready without relying on American support. And now, you know, another good reason for Saudis to look for nukes because they proved to be incapable of bringing down Iranian-backed rebellion in Yemen next door. So I think that the overall situation in the Middle East during the 7 years of Obama's administration have changed dramatically in favor of Iran, in favor of terrorists, in favor of radicals, and the region which was mildly pacified. In 2008, we had reasonable hopes that the situation could improve, especially because of, let's not forget, Iranian Green Revolution in 2009. After rigged elections, hundreds of thousands of Iranians moved to the streets. And for about a month, Iranian government wasn't sure whether they could go after the demonstrators, peaceful demonstrators, because American troops were next door. Mm-hmm. And then they realized that Obama was not ready even to offer a moral support. America betrayed Iranians who wanted a genuine democratic change in their country, left them one-on-one with the repressive machine of Ayatollahs. The Green Movement has been crushed. And now with this phenomenal deal for Iran, I think the hardliners will be in power forever because they proved that their strong standing in America worked. America backed off. America reneged on every ally in the region. And Iran was able to keep every radical stance of its foreign policy, including death to Israel and even death to America, without any consequences throughout these negotiations.
So what you're saying is that had the United States taken a firmer stance vis-a-vis Syria, knowing full well that that was the ally of Iran, you don't think the Iranians nor the Russians would have walked out of the negotiations on the nuclear deal? That would have shown strength and they would have...
No. I think that is, from what I know from history, strength never emboldens dictators to do something drastic. It was exactly the opposite. Iranians were under sanctions and sanctions were biting. And it's the whole story that if it's not peace, it's war. it's ridiculous because this is not a game of chess. This is not black and white. There are many colors in between. And there were many alternatives to war because America had so many ways of increasing the sanctions and making sure that Iranians would be suffering, Iran economy would be suffering even more because no major corporation will try to win Iranian market at the threat of sanctions in the United States. U.S. is still the biggest economy and the most lucrative market. So that's why I don't see any chance for any country, even Russia, to violate openly the sanctions regime. Iran also established itself as the superpower in the region. So even without having nukes, it already, you know, calls the shots. It will get a lot of cash. It stabilizes the situation inside the country. The hardline is now firmly in charge. It sends a message to everybody in the region, don't stand against Iran because America is no longer a factor and we are Iranians, could actually, you know, bring you down. And, you know, it basically kept Iranian nuclear infrastructure in place. If they want to restart it, they will do it.
Garry Kasparov, in the few minutes we have left, let's move briefly to eastern Ukraine. Do you see any light at the end of the tunnel with respect to the situation?
Eastern Ukraine, this is two regions, Donetsk and Lugansk. They have been looted by pro-Russian gangs, and now it's under control of basically Russian forces. The entire operation has been commanded by Russian regulars. And Putin stopped there not because he lost interest for invading Ukraine, but because he made simple calculation. Further incursion in Ukrainian territory would cost him dearly because Ukrainian army proved to be much stronger than he expected. There was a lot of enthusiasm and patriotism demonstrated by not only Ukrainians, but Russian Ukrainians. So instead of embracing Russian tanks, the ethnic Russians in the southeast of Ukraine, they have been joining Ukrainian army to fight against Putin's aggression. So having thousands of body bags coming from Ukraine to Russia was probably too much for Putin. So that's why he just thought that he could freeze the conflict. He definitely keeps military options open. But now we saw another entry. So Syria for him, an opportunity basically to sort of demand from the West as the price for his help against ISIS to ease the sanctions and basically to recognize his blatant aggression.
Do you think that will work? Do you think the international community, the EU, the United States, because right now sanctions continue to be in place right until December.
In the last few months, so many things did happen against my expectations. There's so many concessions made in different quarters for all sorts of thugs in the world. I don't know. Hopefully not. But I have zero confidence in this administration, Obama's administration. I understand that Europe is too weak. Even with Angela Merkel, who I have to give full credit for being a strong leader and keeping Europeans together against Putin. But with all refugees coming in, how long she could hold her ground, nobody knows. And we know one thing from history. Without American leadership, Europe cannot stand alone against Russian aggression and against Russian aggressive foreign policy. And I don't expect any U.S. leadership in the next 15 months. And that's why I think that we can only hope for the limited damage that would be created over this period of time by Putin, Iranian Ayatollahs, North Korean dictators, and other dangerous players on the world stage. But unfortunately, they also know that they have this window of opportunity, the time limit. And American weakness has been provoking them to use this remaining 15 months of Obama in the Oval Office most effectively, which means that we could see more aggression, we could see more bloodshed, we could see more refugees, and we could see the growing crisis. As I said in my book, winter is coming, and we'd better prepare for that.
The book is Winter is Coming, Why Vladimir Putin and the Enemies of the Free World Must Be Stopped. It will be published at the end of October. The author is Garry Kasparov, world-renowned chess champion and global human rights activist. Garry, as always, thank you so much for your terrific insights.
Thank you.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in New York City and Washington. Thank you to Anna Zalewski for booking our guest. Our engineer was Gary Jaffe. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.